State of Ready podcast, where we talk about emergency management, new technology changing lives, and meet some really cool people doing some really cool things in emergency management and preparedness. My name's Ed. I'm owner of Ready Northwest Emergency Management. I'm coming to you from the top left corner of the map, Portland, Oregon.
Ed, my name is Bill Fogarty. I'm coming from you from California, specifically near San Francisco, and I'm reachable at 21 Klutz.
So what we decided during our discussion, me and Bill here, we were talking about on our previous episode that this one was going to be dedicated to partners in emergency management. And when we were talking about this, we were thinking we could have gone one of two ways. One, we could have gone with, hey, you're at a response, emergency management's had an incident, and you're responding, you know, how to include the partners in emergency management. But then we thought about it, and there are so many of you State of Ready listeners out there who are in emergency management programs or Homeland Security who are graduating this year or on the verge of graduation. And so what we wanted to do when it came to partners in emergency management is, as you go out into the workforce, who can you knock on doors to be able to get your foot in the door for emergency management and join the industry that's growing? And so that's kind of what our idea was for this particular episode here, was to give you kind of the gist of how big emergency management is. And even if they don't have jobs that are publicized or you weren't thinking that these could be opportunities, well, we're here to fill you in on that.
Right, Ed. And I think that one of the most important things is to really start thinking about who those partners are and cast a very broad net. And we've talked about this before, and one of the things we kept saying over and over again is to get as many different perspectives as possible and really to come as many backgrounds as possible to really make you a overall well-rounded person and your organization. We want to get people thinking outside the box. We want to get people who really are bringing a diverse group of backgrounds together to make it most successful for the communities that they're serving. And really for us, what we're thinking about our partners is the idea that emergency management is really looking at the 30,000 foot view. You're not on the ground initially responding to an actual event. We're looking at as emergency managers to think about everything that's going on and really to play air traffic controller. You know, our mission is to direct things, assist things, but not actually to respond to things. I think that sometimes that's a little confusing for a lot of people. And one of those things is that we want to help others do their jobs. We are the ones behind the scenes directing the dance and making sure that everyone's able to go ahead and get things accomplished they need to get accomplished, because everyone has needs and we want to go ahead and get them the resources that they need in order to go ahead and successfully recover from an incident or to prepare and plan for an incident. And, you know, along that line, one of the things I want to emphasize is the need to make sure you have MOUs in place before an event occurs. And if you don't know what an MOU is, it's a memorandum of understanding in which parties agree to go ahead and perform certain tasks and to make sure they're going to be able to respond when an incident happens. And it goes back to a whole concept we introduced in session one, which was shaking hands before disaster instead of pointing fingers after. The more you can actually get everyone together, the more you can go ahead and pre-plan for events, the better off you are as an organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very important when you consider having those MOUs in place, the number of different organizations within the public sector that need those MOUs in place, not just within the city-county environment, but you can think about different MOUs and documents and agreements that occur across state lines for a region, as well as nationally. What are some of the city government, or how would you say the tiers of emergency management are when it comes to the government sector?
Well, the way I look at it, and my personal experience has been sort of on a city level to begin with, and each city is looking at having an emergency manager. Hopefully they have a full-time emergency manager, but some cities share them, especially if they're smaller communities. And if you're going to share, make sure you have somebody who's sharing a job in close proximity so they can look at both cities with their own interests and making sure they can work together in case of a critical event. The next sort of tier up is the county or the, and for me, that's where I worked, was the Office of Emergency Services, in which I was able to go ahead and work with our city partners in our emergency, our EMMA programs. If you know what EMMA is, Emergency Management Association, I highly recommend that you join one. And that's really where you get the opportunity to see all these collective groups working together. The next step up is the state or Office of Emergency Services for us here in California. They are incredible partners, great resources, and when you actually put in a request for something, They'll get back to you almost immediately with what is available and how quickly it will get there. And then the last one is obviously federal government and looking at FEMA and understanding when they come to play and what they will actually be doing. You know, one of the things that really is an eye-opening for me was we had a series of storms here in San Mateo County, which we applied for federal assistance, and we had to be ready for the federal government inspectors as well as the state inspectors to come out and take a look at what our damages were in order to justify our declaration of a disaster. You know, in addition to that, obviously, those three tier or those four tiers, city, county, state, and federal, really form the backbone of what public government will be doing in case of a critical event.
You bring up a good point there, Bill. One of the things I want to touch on is that within those organizations, while each of those four tiers may have an emergency management department or an emergency manager, sometimes, like here in the Portland area, we have regional coalitions that get together. And in these regional coalitions, all the emergency managers either get together or they are within maybe a possibly a UASI area, an urban area security initiative, where there is a particular area that gets funding from the federal government because of the different types of assessments that are under it or their proximity to a threat. So sometimes these regions pool together and these coalitions have their own jobs and they have their own staff. So that's also an opportunity out there if you're trying to get into emergency management, is if you can't find positions within the actual city department. Some of these coalitions that are out there have staff positions, especially when it comes to healthcare, security, and then another big one. And I'll tell you, emergency managers will appreciate this if you have the skill, grant writing. If you can write a grant, you're very, very valuable when it comes to a department trying to get additional funding because it's very sparse out there in the emergency management world. It's very important to have a grant writer on there who can clearly delineate what the need is so that they can get the available funding that's out there, because there's a lot of people who are trying to go for the finite amount of resources and dollars that are inside that pot.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that really gets us to sort of the next thing we want to talk about, which is thinking about the departments that are going to be available to respond during a critical event. And what you just touched on is what probably one of the most important ones, which is someone who has the ability to write and document. Documentation is so important whenever you're going through an event or even preparing for an event. So if you can get someone who can write and submit information for a grant proposal and know what needs to be covered, what needs to be done, it's going to help you be even more prepared. In addition to that, obviously, you have your local law enforcement communities, and they will be ones who will probably be working together. So, again, they'll cross city jurisdictions to make sure they have a great response whenever an event occurs. Fire departments in the area, emergency medical, who will be responding, whether or not it is the hospital, whether or not it's the ambulance services. And then lastly, there's the Department of Emergency Management. And in some of the larger cities, you have the Department of Emergency Management, which is responsible for everything. And they're the ones trying to make sure everything works together. You know, I think those are the main normal players, but I also think there's a lot of unfamiliar players. And Ed, can you think of some of the unfamiliar ones that might be occurring in local government?
One of the big ones that plays really well with emergency management is public health. Public health is a is responsibility is, as it says, the public health of a community. And so if there is an outbreak of any type of communicable disease or infectious disease, if there's rampant infection that goes out, the healthcare system, sometimes that's run by the public health district of the county or the city, who manages vaccines or medications. Disasters such as an earthquake, fire, and wildfire aren't the only ones that emergency management has to deal with. If we have a public health emergency, like we saw a couple of years ago with the Ebola virus, this becomes critical for public health to manage and work together with emergency management when it comes to making sure that their communities are safe. So if you're listening out there and you have a medical background, you know, public health may be a particular option that you want to take a look at.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, another sort of step on that is public works. Public health does what they can do to help out whenever an outbreak occurs, but public works is one of those groups that serve the unsung heroes during a critical event. They're the ones that go out and hopefully even before a storm hits, they're cleaning out the gutters, they're getting things ready to sort of storm ready to make sure that when things are going to be coming and affecting the communities, everything is well prepared. And they're also the ones that respond out in the middle of the night when the tree is down and they got the roads that are blocked. They're the ones that come out and really are sort of the unsung heroes who actually help out and clean out events. I think along with that is also animal control. Again, they are so important to help out during events. I can't tell you the number of times that we've seen animals loose or seen animals responding away from flames, especially during the wildfires up in Sonoma and Napa, that we need someone to come in and help out. And maybe anybody who has trailers, which we'll talk about a little bit further, or it could be animal control who's out there to help rescue the animals. Ed, any others you can think of?
Yeah, so let's go with transportation. And we're going to talk particularly road transportation here. Down there in California, you have Caltrans, Oregon DOT, ODOT up here in Oregon. But transportation is critical during a disaster in order to get, first off, emergency vehicles and emergency services moving from point A to point B, but then also the ability to get goods and services across borders and interstate commercially. It's very important that we have transportation lanes open because it is vital to the national infrastructure, to the state's economic ability. So transportation is a huge one. And I know up here we have incident responders and ODOT comes up here, especially when we have winter storm warnings. They will pre-position crews to be able to salt roads, plow them, have escorts, but basically to make sure that we can keep the people moving because we try to keep them with the storms the best we can. But it's very important to keep people and goods moving up and down no matter where they are.
And I think the next one's the National Guard. They really are the ones who are able to get called up by the governor's office, especially for individual states. And they're the ones who are already almost self-contained. They have everything you could ever think of. They have food, they have water. They're basically a full small force multiplier to come out and help you during an event. Now, again, I can tell you from being up at Santa Rosa and Napa, it was very reassuring for the community members to see the National Guard out there. They're fully equipped. They actually brought a lot of technology to bear about being able to forecast wind direction, how much precipitation was in the air, and it's another partner we'll talk about in a second. They also were able to help sort of forecast events and how things would unfold. And I can tell you, without them, we would not have been as successful as we were about being able to evacuate people when the storm was starting to hit them or the firestorm was starting to hit them. The other part was the
And
Army
that,
Corps. Go ahead, Ed.
oh yeah, I was just right about there. I was going to go right with you, but go ahead and take care of Army Corps of Engineers, and then I'll bring up my thought right after that.
I think the Army Corps of Engineers, again, is one of those unsung heroes. They can respond to a critical event, especially when flooding is occurring, and you really want to get them there so they can actually see it, because without them actually seeing it, it sort of doesn't lend itself to as much credibility. When you have photos, when you have someone on the ground, it allows them to understand what the actual problem is so they can come up with a long-term solution for you after an event ends up occurring.
Yeah, exactly. Because they do have, when it comes to items and issues such as right of way, waterway, and power issues, Army Corps of Engineers, I know up here in the Oregon area, are huge to be able to assist and help out when it comes to making sure all those areas are clear. But when you brought out the National Guard was deployed and they were able to do weather forecasting, big shout out to the National Weather Service and to NOAA. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and everybody that works together to provide weather-based services, and not just weather-based, but also they do river forecasting, flood forecasting. The people who work National Weather Service, a big shout out. We know a lot of them follow on Twitter and LinkedIn. What they do to make sure that their citizens and their communities are ready and expecting, whether it's a severe storm that's coming through because it's a squall line of thunderstorms in the Midwest, to winter storms that are about to hit the Pacific Northwest or the Northeast, or a heat wave down in the South, or as we are coming up real close, the hurricane season, they do a phenomenal job. So, and I know that there's many meteorologists that have a background in emergency management. Big shout out to them, and also consider that as a way to get into emergency management.
Absolutely. And I can tell you from having attended their briefings last year, they have a really rough job. Their job is to sort of forecast what the future is based upon previous models, based upon what they're seeing. And I can tell you that they are phenomenal at their jobs. And really, again, as you said, they're the ones who really don't get as much recognition, but they're really sort of the first step in planning for any sort of storms that are going to be impacting. They can predict with huge accuracy where the storm is actually going to travel in your areas and regions. And if you know that, you can pre-position your equipment in areas that are not going to be impacted, that can then perform a first responder sort of capability to the areas that are impacted. And, I think that gets us to the last point, which is utilities. Ed, can you talk about that?
Yeah, so your utilities are very important because we all depend on our basic water, power, light, maybe natural gas. All of that usually is within a public structure. So if your power utility company is a public-private partnership or a public entity, same with your water district, it's important for them, as depending on the size of your community, to be prepared, because once we lose that, depending on what the type of disaster or incident it is, once we lose that, it's going to take a long time, potentially, if we're not prepared to get that back on. And those are services that we may take for granted, but can be critically important for different areas such as the hospitals or for first responders, police stations, schools. It's very important that utilities have emergency managers and emergency management departments on scene, and they test as well too. And not all utilities are public. Some are private. And that leads us into our next segment on who our EM partners are in the private sector.
Yay!
So on this segment, we left off a previous one talking about public sector emergency management partners. And this one, we're going to talk about the private sector, because the private partners, when they work within the greater emergency management machine that goes on, they're a huge resource, because there's people, resources, and skills that are available in the private sector, not just to run their own operations, but also to supplement emergency management. And as emergency management gets more and more visibility, especially in the last couple of years, and we're probably expecting it in the near future, private industry is going to start to see that they're going to work more and more and understand who their emergency managers are. And you're going to start to see a nice symbiotic relationship start, since they don't have in the since they don't have all the resources within emergency management, because maybe a community doesn't have the plows or construction equipment, et cetera. They reach out to the private sector for that. One of the places that they do is in healthcare. Bill, how have you seen healthcare work together during an emergency management response?
Well, I think healthcare really involves two groups of people. You're looking at healthcare from a city or a county that's provided. We're also looking from private industry. And we have in our area a bunch of skilled nursing facilities. And I can't emphasize enough making sure you include them in the planning process. And the reason why is skilled no nurse care facilities are going to be the ones who are going to be very dependent upon first responders or members of the community to help them out during times of a critical event. They're going to need to make sure that there's food, water, shelter, in addition to possibly evacuating people. And so I think beyond that, we're also looking at people like people will be able to provide oxygen or other services to community members who need it. It's so important to think about them and, again, what sort of things they need in case of a critical event.
Exactly. One of the clients that I work with is a hospice provider, and hospices have a tremendous amount of medically trained resources in the form of nurses, grief counselors, social workers. So imagine if a community has a large-scale incident, plane crash, mass shooting, and then all of a sudden you have a tremendous need for grief counselors and social workers to be able to assist the victims and the survivors and the community and themselves. So adding in all these different healthcare partners, and some of them are large organizations that, whether or not they may have their own emergency manager, or maybe sites have their own administrator who handles the coordination, this can be an opportunity for you out there if you're trying to figure out where can I fit in with my background. Definitely take a look at the healthcare sector, in addition to hospices, surgical centers, skilled nursing facilities, as Bill brought out. Another one that's near and dear to my heart is aviation. My previous background before I became an emergency manager is I flew helicopters and was immersed in aviation. And aviation assets are tremendous when it comes to bringing in resources and people into an affected area. We have all seen pictures of a disaster, tsunami, earthquake, hurricane, flooding like we've seen in Harvey, where we can either get boats in, or the majority of rescues are done via helicopter. So aviation companies are huge when it comes to coordinating with local emergency management and city, that they can be tapped as a resource. Aircraft as well too, they shuttle people in and they shuttle supplies. But one of the cool upcoming ones, and I want to really talk about this, Bill, you may have some experience with it in the fires, but as people call drones or unmanned aerial systems, the technology that's coming out with drones and UASs allow for rapid response of information on scene that has not normally been able to be utilized. They can also help out in the recovery through imaging, post-disaster assessment. But if you are doing UASs, please understand the regulations. Please understand that you cannot fly those when other aircraft are flying. Have you seen use cases of unmanned systems out during the fires during your response there, Bill?
We have, we're very blessed to be in the Bay Area where there's a lot of high tech and a lot of people who are sort of front runners into technology. Among us locally, we have the Menlo Park Fire Department, and we have the Alameda County Sheriff's Office who believe in on UASs, as you said, or drones. So again, I've been able to see them firsthand at the fires actually in Santa Rosa. The local Alameda County Sheriff's Office actually put up a drone and was able to start looking at what areas have been impacted. Able to search for hotspots that maybe were overlooked during the middle of the fire, and also start looking for who might be around to go ahead and be rescued. I can't emphasize enough again how important it is to think about if even if you're not even involved in emergency management, but you are actually certified to fly a drone, to go ahead and come out and bring your resources, work with your local first responders, work with your emergency managers to really give them an opportunity to see what's happening firsthand. And if you don't have somebody who's trained in that, get somebody who's trained in that because they are, again, what we've talked about in previous episodes is a force multiplier. They'll actually help you be able to understand what is impacting you. And I think one of the things that last things I want to cover in aviation is also don't forget about private satellite companies. There are now so many different services that are available that will actually be able to have a satellite locally over your area, and they'll be able to take photos of in areas that are potentially impacted. Whether or not it's a ability to go ahead and do an assessment, or whether or not they're going to help you locate ways to get in and out of the areas that are impacted, think about them and what resources they have to bear to go ahead and help you during a critical event. And Google recently sold off of their company that was a satellite imagery, but they actually offer them during two first responders during a critical event. And I would say reach out to them and find out what those agencies are and what they can do for you.
Yeah, one of the ones that I follow along is Planet Labs. Planet does microsatellites. Also has the ability to do that. You can request services, and they are based out of the Bay Area. They're a commercial satellite network. So a shout out to planet.com, or if you want to follow them on Twitter, at Planet Labs. Some of the stuff that they do and are able to accommodate disaster response. If you're an emergency management agency or a private agency involved in emergency management, good people to know and understand and get a relationship with. You never know when you might need quick, rapid, large scale assessment that an aircraft might be too expensive or not available, or drones can't cover that distance. Give them a holler, see what they can do for you. When it comes to that, when we're talking about things that fly, we're going to also talk about things that are on the ground as well too. And we're talking about transit agencies. Many large scale metropolitan areas have transit agencies, and they shuttle people through the use of either rail, light rail, and buses. And it's very important that moving people from one side of the city to the other is critical because not everybody has the ability to just jump into a car. So transit agencies are an area where you can find emergency management positions. And in addition to transit, not just public transit, but also private transit, school buses, area of companies that have large scale fleets of school buses. Work together with the school district if there is some sort of evacuation, or you have to take a lot of kids from one place to another and get them there effectively and safely in a disaster. Sometimes there are private businesses that run school buses that utilize emergency managers. So those are, if they're in your community, reach out and see if you can make relationships, see if they have emergency managers on board, and see what you can do. Because that's also, I know that there are urban planners that are very interested in transit who have an emergency management background. So give that a shot and see how that goes.
I think the next one is construction and debris management companies and really looking at what they can do for you. They are absolutely critical for the recovery process. And the idea to actually, again, plan with them is going to end up helping you out when you're looking at how to go ahead and recover during a critical event. Have pre-planned MOUs with them, find out what they can do. And they're the ones who are going to be responsible for really hauling off the garbage so that the cities continue to function. Garbage could be anything. It could be rubble from a building. It could be sanitation issues that you need to go ahead and get debris away from the area so that way people don't get sick. And it really is going to be one of those things that they can end up bringing to you the things that you need in order to rebuild and to be able to function. And sometimes it might be something simple like wood and nails. Other times it might be a little more complex looking at how they can go ahead and haul away things that you need using skip loaders or something else that is going to be really big but requires a special operator to go ahead and operate.
And in addition to construction debris management companies, Bill, you bring up a great point. And if you're out there listening and you're like, where can I get my start? How can I start making plans? Reach out to your construction companies, reach out to debris management companies, garbage companies, because here's the thing. If a disaster strikes, who is going to move all of that stuff? If you prepare businesses within your own community to respond to a disaster, they will be the first ones to get called. And that's what they want. They want the community to rebuild. Can you imagine how much of a delay it takes if you have to get a company that's 3, 6, 9 hours away to bring in their heavy equipment because the company wasn't planning? They didn't pre-position assets to a place where we know we can respond, or that their assets are under rubble, or they're flooded and they could have moved them up to a high line. So it's very important for construction companies and debris management companies within a community to have effective emergency management plans and work together so that once that storm hits, they can effectively respond. And that goes into business continuity and a whole nother aspect of emergency management that we can save for another episode. But Bill's right on par, making sure, because like, that stuff's got to go somewhere. So you got to make sure that these companies can be able to move it.
Absolutely. And I think, the part of that you just touched on, sort of the recovery process, is IT and utilities. And again, working with the people in your local area, if you don't have someone who is GIS certified, find someone who's GIS certified. Hey, can you talk a little bit about GIS and what you're thinking?
Yeah, so what's important when it comes to GIS providers is you have somebody who's able to overlay all of the information that's coming in, whether it's roads that are closed, whether it's the movement and areas of the fire, where it's where flooding is occurring or vulnerable populations or the forecasted movement of a fire or a flood. People who utilize GIS are so critical because they allow somebody to get the mindset in that planning process and go, here's what's happening now, overlaid on a map. Here's what's happening in 6 hours. Here's what's happening in 12. So we can effectively plan the whole entire incident based upon the information we're getting. And we can put it either on a Google map. If you don't have access to a specific GIS system that is out there, you can utilize all this information on Google Maps by putting in the evacuation routes, affected areas, pins on the Google map where the shelters are located. And push that out to your community, but utilize GIS providers. Have somebody on your staff who knows GIS. If you don't, like Bill said, get somebody who can. Either bring them in on a volunteer basis or hire somebody on as a part-time. But emergency management really needs to work alongside GIS and GIS providers in order to effectively do their job.
And I think that brings up the next thing of tech. And who in your communities are tech providers, and who can you go speak to or work with? Again, we're lucky in the Bay Area here. We have so many that are available, whether or not it's V5, whether or not it is Intel, Google, Facebook. Get a relationship with them and understand that the people there want to be safe during an event, just like the rest of the residents of your community. So get them to work with you on solutions to problems that you have now, whether or not it's connectivity issues, Wi-Fi, figuring out what they're going to do during a critical event, but also reach out to them and see if you can go ahead and become fast friends with them. They are a wealth of knowledge and information. So go to them and talk to them and find out really what they're looking for and how they can end up assisting you. And again, this is what we talk about, making sure you have a broad, diverse background of people who are going to be assisting you during a critical event.
And in regards to that, so you have your tech providers, you have organizations and businesses that provide critical software that emergency management agencies use, whether it's from the city level all the way up to the state. If you're in emergency management, I brought this out on a LinkedIn post earlier, consider working for those vendors because those vendors work and create emergency management products, they're going to want an emergency manager on there because once emergency management tells you this works, this doesn't work, you have the mindset and you understand. So definitely take a look at the software providers that are out there and see about utilizing your emergency management knowledge to be able to provide a product to emergency managers so that you're able to have the knowledge that makes that stuff work.
And then, one of the things I thought about as you're speaking about that is how important it is to have software, specifically sort of a cloud system, so that way you can go ahead and retrieve your records wherever you need them. You can update information from the field and everyone can go ahead and see it real time. And you and I use Google Docs. I heavily recommend Google Docs or Google Drive. It's free, it's easy to use. It really is common sense. But another one that's available out there is Dropbox. you don't know what Dropbox is, again, I encourage you to look at what it is out there to go ahead and store documents. And the last one's Box. Really, the three sort of big names for me for cloud computing and looking at how you can get the information you need at the locations that you need it during times of critical events. I can't emphasize enough that the need to have the basics like paper and pen, but you also need to have access to tech, especially during an event, and especially with what we have for connectivity.
Bingo, right on the money there. And you know what? Everybody out there listening, those companies who emergency managers depend on, like Dropbox, Google, tech companies, they all need emergency preparedness managers for their companies to protect their employees and their facilities. So definitely something you could take a look at. Retail, me and Bill were talking about retail and just how much of an asset they are when you consider Walmart, Lowe's, Home Depot, Target. These organizations have their own emergency operation centers, constantly looking at all their facilities, constantly paying attention to where weather events may occur. And then, if something happens, this whole armada of resources and supplies and trucks head into that affected area. It's very important that these organizations have emergency managers. And I would take a, I mean, go ahead and Google Walmart EOC or Lowe's Home Depot EOC, and you'll see just how much money and resources are put into making sure that these organizations are able to respond.
And I think, Ed, one of the ideas that I thought about is Budweiser. And when you look at the ability that Budweiser, they're very actually smart in their development, and they tried to be the king of beers by being the freshest. And what they did was they actually established breweries in around the country to be able to go ahead and make their product as fresh as possible and have a great supply chain, make it as close to possible to people they're going to be giving it out to. What Budweiser does during a critical event is they'll actually bottle or can beer for you. So when you look at sort of one of the most important things for us here in the Bay Area, we're heavily dependent upon fresh water that comes from Sierra Nevadas. And should something end up happening to those pipes that go from the Sierra Nevadas all the way to the San Francisco Bay Area, we have Budweiser in our local area that can actually can and bottle water and actually get it to us almost immediately. So that way we can help give the people what is needed, which obviously is food and water and shelter.
And in addition to that, food, water, and shelter, I want to give a shout out to Tide. Tide, if you haven't looked at their Loads of Hope program that they have, Tide is one of those that comes into a community with mobile washing machines because the last thing you want to do when in a disaster is lose everything, or you're in a shelter for 6 days with the clothes that you have on your back, or maybe a slight change and no way to be able to wash them. So Tide comes into affected communities with washing machines, sets up shop, and allows the residents that are affected to come in and clean up their laundry. It is so motivating, not just for the community, but for an individual and a family psyche and their, oh, I can't think of the word, the morale of them during this sad incident that may be occurring, to know that they can get their clothes clean for new laundry. And Tide is a pioneer in that by coming into these organizations for that.
And I think the next one for me, I keep thinking about is amusement parks and really looking at what they can do. They are such a large footprint that you can look at them for possibly providing sheltering operations for you. There are groups like Disneyland have their own EOC and are very fully developed and robust where they can tell you everything that's going on within a Disney property. Having been to Disneyland EOC, I can tell you that they see everything and they are constantly preparing for what it is that may be impacting them. Everything from cyber attacks to unfortunately, people would want to do harm to people at Disneyland and looking at all their properties in Anaheim. And they are so phenomenal to be able to go ahead and reach out to their corporate headquarters because, again, Disney is a multinational company that has to be prepared for things that are going to end up impacting them around the world. So if you think about them and you think about other ones that may be present within your local communities, go out and talk to them. They are more than a wealth of information that can show you what they have and get you sort of thinking of things that may be impacting them.
Yeah, how cool is it to say that you're in emergency management at Disneyland? Okay. I mean, that singular park sees tens of thousands of people on a daily basis. Now, what's interesting is our segments are broken up. I only have 20 minutes per segment. So we have two more critical private emergency management partners. So we're going to jump into that on our next segment here. So we just left off on Disneyland and amusement parks, and those are great opportunities for emergency management. If you're trying to think about where I should go, take a look at amusement parks. But we're going to jump into something that we all take for granted and that we all think will always be there, except when it comes to a disaster, and that is our fuel and petroleum needs. Bill, how critical is it that we have emergency managers partnered with fuel providers?
Well, I think it's critical. We always have gas stations in our community, but yet we don't know how the gas actually gets there. And we start thinking about the distribution systems that they have and how those might be cut off. And it's a great idea to go ahead and start thinking about where you can stockpile gas that is going to be able to be available to your communities. And think about people like All American Gas, who actually have stockpiles of CO2 or oxygen that the community members are going to need. But also really think about how they're going to get the gas that's in the ground out of the ground and look at what pumping operations they have. We have a lot of facilities here in the Bay Area that have solar panels. The problem is those solar panels are hooked up directly to the grid, so that if the grid goes down, they're not going to be able to function to go ahead and get the gas out of the ground. And so it's so important to think about gas stations, but also the shipments that are going to be coming in, where they're going to be coming from, and how you're going to be able to get those supplies during an event when you need it.
Yeah, exactly. Because a lot of that, if it's not pipeline, it's coming in by truck. And then once again, where's the truck come from? It comes on roadway. So there's your transportation infrastructure needs that have to be met. So you can see this big circle that all needs emergency management preparedness planning, all needs to be on the same plan, all needs to be on the same mind of thinking. If you lose fuel, think about that everything that happens downhill from there. So if we can't get gas in, we can't fill up our fire trucks, we can't fill up our police cars, we can't fill up our generators. And that's just for the first responders and everybody responding. That doesn't include the community that's out there. So if you're a petroleum provider, if you are a fuel distribution site or a tank farm or a organization that trucks fuel, having emergency managers on board, having an emergency management coordinator to work with the local emergency managers and the state to be able to move this fuel is highly important, and you should always be at the table whenever they are discussing emergency management exercises or plans.
Absolutely. I think, for us here in California, we had the Orville Dam spillway issue. And obviously, during times like you have hurricanes, you look at cars that are left on the side of the road because they did not have gas prepared before an event ends up happening, or it was fully unpreparable. And really, again, how are you going to get those cars out of there? And maybe you need to get the cars out of the roadway so first responders can get there. And really, what I keep thinking about is, you not just need to ha think about how you're going to get the gas out of the ground, how you're going to get gas to the gas stations, but also where are your distribution points and how are those cars going to be, or how those trucks going to be mobile enough to actually get to you where you need them.
Yeah, bingo. Speaking of things that go on the ground, sanitation. You don't think about that until it's actually gone. So when you think about and a community experiences a disaster, whether it's a regional or a local event, that doesn't stop us from doing what nature calls us to do. We still have to have sanitation running, but it may not be in the form that we know. So we may have porta potties that are put out. We may have to resort to our own home and utilizing a two bucket system because we cannot effectively flush due to compromised pipes. But sanitation companies, those who do porta potties, those who do run sanitation and wastewater treatment areas, huge critical partner that needs emergency managers, that partners with emergency management agencies to make sure that those all still continue and go up and running as best as they possibly can in a large-scale disaster.
Absolutely. And I think, for me, those are the big organizations that we really have. And I really now want to go to sort of our last segment about volunteer agencies and really emphasize again what we talked about in our last podcast. We look at CERT teams and we looked at how important they are during a critical event. Well, one of the things I think about is that CERT teams are your first responders to go ahead and help you out. And again, they become force multipliers. I think besides that, you're also looking at sort of the national VOTA agencies. And Ed, do you have some ideas about those?
Oh, there's so many national VOAD agencies out there. Remember, national voluntary organizations active in disaster. These are community organizations that can be national members. There's many of them. Adventist Community Services, the American Red Cross is one. Amateur Radio Emergency Service. Those who are ham operators out there. Also consider Feeding America, Habitat for Humanity. All of these are national VOAD members. But then we also consider Mercy Corps is another one too. These are the ones that can you can volunteer for, be a part of them, and then respond whether it is a local disaster and they are activated and assisting during the recovery and response process, or they you can be deployed out to where there's a need, whether it's in the Gulf Coast after a hurricane, the Midwest after there is a storm, or if we unfortunately get an earthquake up here in the Pacific Northwest and on the West Coast. So you have all of these different agencies, and feel free to go to their website, nvoad.org, and you could take a list at all of the, or you could take a look at the list of all of the different agencies. You can click on the link to learn more, you can donate, or you can sign up to volunteer. And once again, a big shout out to Team Rubicon and what they do by helping veterans that are coming back in and integrating into civilian life and really utilizing the skills and the teamwork and the commitment and discipline that they have to really create cohesive teams in disaster response and recovery.
And I think that leads to the next one, which is non-governmental agencies and organizations, and look at which ones can affect or impact you. And, if you're not a member of Pulse Point, please download the app and find out what Pulse Point is. Basically, in times of critical events and someone needs somebody to come help them, they're the ones who are going to be able to go ahead and link people together with automatic external defibrillators and get people the help that they need during a critical event. And, again, this becomes a force multiplier because your first responders may not be able to get someone right away. So look at something like Pulse Point that can end up helping you out. And the next one I really want to bring up is a shout out to someone who I know. They are forming humanityroad.org, which is basically Humanity Road or hashtag HMRD. Connects people, animals, and emergency officials with help and resources. When disaster strikes, impacted areas are overwhelmed and they become viable life-saving solutions or information. Humanity Road is an additional lifeline for those affected, whether or not it's local officials, emergency response teams. And their idea is to use technology and social listening platforms to help locate, organize, and connect people and communities with valuable information and critical resources. They're the ones who, again, if you are looking for some way to volunteer, they are a great way to volunteer and help out. Ed, what about faith-based organizations?
Yeah, so faith-based organizations, if you are a member of a place of worship, a church, or other faith-based community, you can be a part of faith-based organizations that go out and respond. A lot of them are members of National VOAD, such as Mennonite Disaster, Salvation Army, there's a Samaritan's Purse. There's many different ones. So if you're associated with an organization, a religious organization, and you want to figure out how you can be able to help, take a look at the National VOAD or reach out to your church leaders or your pastors or whoever is that you could reach out to and be able to ask, hey, is there something that we can do? Are we part of an organization? Because they go out and they help out all those affected, not just of their faith, but all those affected within a region and be able to really help out and provide not just response and rebuilding at people, but also they go out and they also provide spiritual comfort to people as well. And when you consider when a disaster occurs and all these volunteers are coming in, sometimes they are not associated with any group and they're what we call spontaneous volunteers. And there's no way you could stop them. They want to help. They get their buddies, they get their families, they get their friends, and they head on into the disaster zone. So you may have seen some of those during Hurricane Harvey or last year. One of them is the Cajun Navy. You may have seen what they have done in social media and how they responded to the affected areas in Texas because they had boats, they had people, and most importantly, they had a willingness to help. And so utilizing technology that was out, the Cajun Navy came in and really was a force multiplier to help out really strapped and to the limit emergency responders who just couldn't get to everybody at the same time. A lot of that was connected with crowdsource rescue. So if you want to take a look at crowdsource rescue, crowdsourcerescue.com or on Twitter at CS underscore rescue, take a look at what they did with technology and how they were able to get 25,000 people rescued when 911 is overwhelmed by utilizing the technology that we have now and the willingness of volunteers to come in with their equipment and resources. Take a look at their story. It is phenomenal how they were able to help out so many people. And if you're an emergency manager, contact them, contact others who were coordinating these rescues because they're GM people so that they can come in and be able to help.
And Ed, I just want to follow up on one of your very important comments that you're going to have spontaneous volunteers at any critical event, any large event. And so you need to assign somebody to really coordinate, organize, and get them focused on what they can do and what they can't do. I want people to come help me during an event, but I also want to make sure that they're qualified and that they're going to be taking care of themselves. So I don't have to worry about them helping other people out during an event. And to me, I always try to make sure that someone is personally assigned to go ahead and be that sort of liaison. Let me know what they're doing. Let me know what they can do to help me. Let me know what equipment they have. Let me know what their needs are, but also make sure that we're not going to put them in harm's way.
Which is very, very important. Volunteers are coming, and a lot of the ones, NGOs, non-governmental organizations, faith-based organizations, those national VOAD members, a lot of them have plans in place and protocols in place to be able to vet their members and to be able to run a background check, make sure they have the proper resources and credentialing to be able to respond to these incidents. Not the same necessarily with spontaneous volunteers. So, as Bill brought out, it's very important to have somebody on your staff who's in charge of volunteer management, who can process these volunteers that have come through, account for what equipment they have, and then really put them in a way where they're not in harm's way, but a really useful, element of the disaster response effort.
And I think we covered a lot of information in a short amount of time, but I think we need to wrap up this episode. And so, what are some of the lessons learned from this episode?
Yeah, so numerous agencies can be considered partners. So it's not just the emergency management, and that's what you see on the door or you see on the jackets, but numerous agencies work alongside emergency management, and numerous agencies need emergency managers. So definitely consider that.
I think it's a great point. I also think if you're interested in emergency management, you can find a home, you can find a place. You know, I don't care what your skill set is, I don't care how tall, how short, I don't care what your experience level, I want you to come help. And part of going to help is you find out your niche, whether or not it is tech, whether or not it's on the ground, whether or not it is helping people behind the scenes. Go out, get involved, and participate in organizations that you can get the skill sets that you need to go ahead and advance your way in emergency management. If you have no experience, and I can tell you from interviewing people, you need people who have experience. The only way to get experience is to go out and do it. And if you want to be one of the most credible emergency managers that are available, then go out and get that experience, that hands-on where people see you doing something, and then something you can relate to when you're in charge and operating as an emergency manager.
And I think you make a great point. You don't need a hurricane, a Cat 5 hurricane. You don't need a 6.0 earthquake. You don't need a cat or category 4 tornado to come through community. You can find a place within an organization and help out with their emergency management if they just have a flooding incident or if they have a fire within their own building. These are emergencies to them. And so if you're looking in the private industry, you're like, where can I fit in? You know, your emergency management background and the what you can do doesn't just have to apply to large scale incidents. And unfortunately, I mean, we have active shooter, hostile intruder, but we also have cybersecurity. We also have just regular, you know, somebody left the stove on and burned the building down. So now we got to figure out how to rebuild. That's an emergency management skill. So definitely take a look at that. Because the other thing I want to emphasize on one of our lessons learned is each agency or business comes into play at a different time. Some are really good at preparedness. Public Works is one. They put mitigation skills in to prevent infrastructure failures or to keep the roadways going. Others come into play, such as VOAD agencies and retail. They come into play during the response and recovery phase to help rebuild. So figure out where you want to be and get involved in it because you never know. You might be part of the preparedness side, you might be part of the response and recovery, but each agency has different times where they come on stage and it's their time to shine. So take a look at those.
I think another one is technology, and that is creating a whole new group of volunteer opportunities that never existed before. You do not have to be in the impacted or affected areas to respond. I think this is one of the great advantages. Instead of looking at how things used to be done, you now have an opportunity to participate live time. If you're not in an area, connect with somebody who is affected in that area and help them. You may have power, water, and sewer. So find out what they need and what you can do to help them. Maybe it's communicating information using social media and the groups that we brought up. Please, if you're not already a member of them, look at joining so that you can help out other communities.
Yeah. And then another one, think of these out of sight agencies or businesses. We talked about public health, we talked about animal control, we talked about finance. I mean, consider finance and administration. Somebody's got to get paid, somebody has to put in the grant writing or the documentation. We don't necessarily maybe consider insurance as being part of emergency management, but they really are. So, and we talked about on the private sector side, construction companies, debris management, and sanitation. These businesses are usually out of sight. We don't think about it, but critical to the response and recovery effort. So these are some of the most important people and niches and industries to take a look at, include them in planning. And if you're an emergency manager, go out there and knock on their doors and say, "How can I help?" If you're trying to get a job, get some experience in different facets of the field, from the private sector side to the public to sales to industry response to plan management and creation. All of that is out there. And so what me and Bill really want to emphasize is, if you are looking in emergency management for a position, we just gave you a whole lot of different ones to take a look at. But don't stop there. If there's something that we didn't consider, and I'm remembering this now because me and Bill had a conversation, but technology companies like Uber and Lyft, their drivers are all out there. They got to account for them in a disaster. So the world is changing. Their emergencies and disasters are going to always occur, and we're realizing the need to have coordinated response, both for the organization that they work for, whether it's public or private, or for the community that they respond to.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think that's a perfect segue to talk about what our next episode. Ed, what's our next episode?
Next episode, something near and dear to both me and your heart, and pretty much everybody else that lives in this world: social media and websites.
Absolutely.
And
And
I
we'll be having a
think.
special guest come to us also, who is actually a press information officer, and we'll be sharing their insight as well.
Excellent. We are looking forward to that. We hope you are as well too. We want to thank you for listening to this episode of State of Ready. Remember, you can follow us on the Anchor app, download the Anchor app, or online anchor.fm, as well as all the numerous other places where our podcasts are. You can find us on Radio Overhead, Apple Tunes, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Overcast. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can. My name's Ed. I'm with Ready Northwest, ReadyNW.com, or at Twitter, Ready_Northwest.
And this is Bill. You can reach me at 21 Klets on Twitter or at www.21klets.com. We look forward to having you listen to us next week. And as always, if you have anything that you'd like us to know, feel free to get in touch with us and let us know.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.